It is Tuesday, December the 8th, and it's time for Campus Connection. I'm your host, Angela Denning, and I'm joined in a conference call by Superintendent Erica Kluepainter and School Board President Sarah Holmgren. Hello.
Good afternoon. Hello.
So tonight at 6 p.m. is a regular meeting of the school board, and KFSK will be broadcasting the meeting for people to listen to. It looks kind of like a light agenda tonight.
Yeah, we have a few things to talk about with, you know, the calendar. There's some proposed ideas there, and then I think just kind of some good general updates from administrators about what's going on in their buildings and some activities updates. And I wanted to talk a little bit about a grant that's starting up, and then just talk about a little bit with assessment and how our kids are doing. You know, we didn't get to have a state assessment last year, so we thought we'd provide some information about how our kids are doing on our local MAP assessments that we've talked about before. So, yeah.
Well, we can go through some of those topics, starting with the calendar proposal. It looks like the school board might be considering changing the district spring break. Now, the current calendar has 6 days off for spring break, and that's in mid-March. And the suggestion is taking those 6 days and splitting them up between weekends in March, April, and May. And I looked at the calendar itself. So for folks to kind of visualize what that could mean, it would be 2 days off in March, the 19th and 22nd, which would create a 4 day weekend. And then 3 days in April, the 23rd, 26th, and 27th, creating a 5 day weekend. And then 1 day off in May, the 14th, creating a 3 day weekend. Is that about right?
Yes. And then there was also one in February on President's Day that on the 15th. So there's an in-service day already scheduled on the 12th. So that would be a day for kids to be out. And then the Monday would be a vacation day. So that would be the sixth day from those six that were allocated originally for spring break. And then the May 14th date was thinking ahead to what, you know, who knows what Mayfest Little Norway might look like. But that was just a thought there that might be a nice day. A lot of people are involved in things if we have some sort of community celebration. So that's kind of where the thinking was coming from there.
Okay. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about kind of how the proposal came about, taking the regular week-long spring break and kind of scattering it around throughout the spring?
Well, as we always talk about with calendars, there's no perfect calendar. I wish there were, but that's just not the way it works. And I always kind of joke about it. Sarah's listened to me say this several times over the years. But, you know, if you put out three different calendars, you'll have a third of the people that will strongly advocate for each one of those calendars. If you put out two, you'll have half and half and, you know, so on and so forth. So you know, there's always a lot of things to consider. And we are, you know, we, of course, want to look at student learning and the instructional time, you know, being of course very important as well. So I think that the ideas come about. I've had people talk to me about it. Families have talked to me. Students have mentioned it. You know, and then some of our school staff too, just saying, you know, what would a week actually look like in the spring, knowing that it's going to be very different potentially than past years. We don't know what's happening with basketball activities. We don't know really what's going to be happening with travel, although it's likely not going to probably change too much. So that makes it challenging, again, you know, somewhat for families and even staff, you know, to actually be able to leave potentially and you know, take that break off the island. So it was brought up, you know, well, maybe it's a way of spreading out and having just some opportunities to have some shorter kind of breathing opportunities, I guess, for kids and even teachers and maybe families too. Maybe you could get out and, you know, do a 3 day little weekend adventure somewhere and kind of get a break. I believe Wrangell actually has done this sort of schedule for quite a few years. And I know it's been discussed in Petersburg before, but that's kind of where it came from. So, you know, we'll see. There may be other feedback from people and they may, you know, people may really not like the idea or you know, people may feel like it might be a nice kind of happy medium, a bit of a compromise. So that's where it came from.
And Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I was looking more for direction, and we did get it from the district, because I think like Erica said, a lot of families, including our own family, aren't traveling for the foreseeable future, at least for now. And we can't imagine travel protocols being significantly different in March. So, you know, the idea of having a break here and there each month sounds pretty appealing right now. Not only a break from just having to, you know, for the kids having to wear a mask all day at school, but it's, you know, really for some, it might even be easier for childcare because they're dealing with 2 or 3 days every month instead of an entire week long, you know, if you're looking at it even from that perspective. But hopefully we'll be back to a more normal calendar next fall. My fingers are crossed. but I was more concerned with what the staff would want to see. Kids have become very apparent. They're quite resilient and flexible. And the adults are, you know, this is a big change for them, and whether they would still want a full on week break or they would prefer these kind of mini breaks, for lack of a better description. And it sounds like the majority of them were for these little mini breaks, considering our strange school year. So.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I could see, you know, if a family did want to travel off island and have a big family spring break, they could maybe be opposed to it. But if for families wanting to stay around, 4-day weekends would give them a chance to do more kind of family events closer to the island.
Yeah.
And I would
without having to go through any sort of quarantine or anything like that afterwards. You know, it just seems like it's a little more flexible to some of these. And we'll just hope we get really nice weather during those times.
Well, if it's scattered around, I mean, the calendar shows it being scattered around. So at least something has to be a good weather weekend.
Hit the bullet somewhere or the bullseye somewhere.
It's like throwing a really wide net out and, you know.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's important too, just to say out loud, is that, you know, if there are families who are in need of, you know, I mean, we do know that there are still kids who are looking at, you know, even colleges and things like that, you know, and I know a lot of families are up in the air about those kinds of visits too. I will say the last few years, we've definitely noticed that, you know, even those kind of trips and things are often not able, you know, to happen over that 1 week. And so, I think, you know, spring break, yeah, it looks different. It's looking different here than it's looked, I think, in the past. I think people's travel schedules and even just flight availability and cost of flights and all those kinds of things is sort of a bigger driver than it used to be. And so, you know, we often have families that we need, you know, we work with because their travel schedules don't match up, you know, with a spring break or whatever. So I guess I would just say, if there's families out there that are, you know, really worried about this, or, you know, we're, as we've said with most things this year, you know, we're going to do our best to work with you. And we certainly know that, especially for older kids, they can always, you know, ring in. So lots of flexibility there, I think. And we don't want people to panic. We want to do what we can do to work with it. But this was just, an effort to kind of take some of that feedback we've gotten from people.
Okay. All right. And then you mentioned the board going over the standardized assessment results. I'm assuming those are the results from this fall. And
yes.
Okay. And that's the statewide, correct?
Well, no, it's not. And that's where we were, you know, usually we're able to, in the fall, we're able to spend some time talking with the board and the community about the PEAKS results from the spring. And that is the state assessment. And the state, during the shutdown last spring, they opted not to have that assessment be given because there were too many variables with the assessment, you know, being given online, and they just didn't have protocols and procedures in place for it. So we didn't have that. So what we wanted to just talk through tonight, we've got a kind of a presentation we'll go through tonight. Bridget Whitstock will be on there, the district test coordinator, and I believe Jen is going to be on there, Turner, talking a little bit about ACT results. And we just, you know, wanted to go through the information that we do have. So the MAP assessments are the ones we've talked about before. That's something we've started using. I think this is probably our fourth or fifth year as a district, and an effort to have an assessment that's different than PEAKS, which is a summative one time, here's how you did on this day type of assessment. And MAP is more of that academic progress and growth. So that is more helpful, we feel, for students and for teachers. also because students can see where they are, they can set some goals for themselves, they can see their growth over time. It doesn't mean that they have to compare themselves necessarily, you know, just specifically achievement-wise with another student in the class. They can look at their own learning and the skills they've mastered and then set goals for, you know, skills they want to improve upon. And they're very helpful for teachers. It's more of an instructional measure, you know, so people can actually see, oh, there's some holes here, there's some gaps here, this is what we want to work on, or, you know, and you can really kind of individualize instruction better. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And then there's some linking studies that have come out recently related to PEAKS, the assessment, the state assessment, and MAP, and just kind of talking about some predictive ability of the MAP scores, you know, kids doing well in certain areas on those, it kind of predicts how well they might do on a summative PEAKS assessment. So we'll just talk a little bit about that tonight. And our kids are definitely making growth. We're pleased to see that and just to be able to kind of talk through, you know, how that looks. So that's what we're going to do tonight.
So it sounds like maybe MAP is kind of more individualized. Can you see any kind of thing with like the whole student body? Did anything jump to your attention, or can you even do that with the MAP?
You can. I mean, there's definitely some, you know, sort of some average, you know, kinds of things. They have kind of a score that they use. It is called a RIT score, and it's basically, it's like a waypoint, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then, you know, you can see, kids can see their growth from, you know, one year. And so we've seen definitely some really good positive growth. Younger students tend to show more growth because they're learning so many new skills and younger. So that does tend to be a trend. That's just a normal trend. Younger kids, you see greater growth. And so that certainly was borne out in our district, and some good measures in math and reading across the board that way, and some good, you know, good comparisons to even some national percentiles as well. So yeah, so our kids are making good progress.
Was there anything that indicated any declines possibly related to COVID and kind of the shuffling of school schedules?
Well, that's what we were really interested in seeing. And you know, there, yes, I would say yes. I think our ACT results, we typically as a district, our students perform quite high on ACT, and our students did well on it. It probably wasn't as well as we've done in the past. The other thing that we do that's different here than many other schools is we actually offer the ACT and provide time in school for all of our kids to take it, the grade level that in school to take the ACT, they all get to. We provide that to everyone. So it's not just a, you know, if you show up on a Saturday, you take it. So we think that's really important, but that also, that includes, you know, every single student and all averaged together. So, you know, so that definitely had an impact last year. Kids taking that was challenging, you know. And then I would say some of the gaps that we're seeing in some of our math instruction as well, some of our math scores, and the PEAKS test is historically quite quite interesting with the math standards are pretty ambitious, and that's been it's been a push for us. It's been a challenge. I mean, that's across the state, you know, as well. But so our students do well, but you know, certainly there's room for us to keep pushing forward. So I think the gaps in instruction there, the difficulty in, you know, some of that work being done remotely, you know, even with as strong of a showing as we had with our kids last spring, you know, signing in and being available and being online, it's challenging. Sometimes you just need that person right in front of you doing that instruction. So
when would the PEAKS happen next?
It would be in April, usually the end of March, beginning of April. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. I will say that one other thing they've been investigating is because a summative assessment does not really provide a lot of instructional information, they actually have been looking at a model that might use the MAP, a MAP type test, or even MAP as the statewide assessment, there's been a movement toward that. They've actually been looking at that for a couple of years. So I don't know if that's going to come to fruition this year. You know, there's lots of concern. We're one of few schools that are in person. So they can't quite figure out, I don't think, how to manage this with the remote, you know, and sort of have that test security. I don't think they have it figured out yet.
Yeah, I could see that being very challenging. And then just kind of comparing almost not quite apples to oranges this year, you know, with all the different ways the kids are learning in the different districts. Like you say, some of them are completely all virtual, no in person.
Exactly. And so there's just definitely some things that, as we're finding, you know, even with the best intentions, the best, you know, teachers on the other side of that and working so hard and families working hard and kids trying to get online and do those things, you know, it's not the same, you know, and it's challenging. So there definitely are, you know, kind of some holes that are being created by that. So not sure where that's going to go.
Sarah, do you have anything to add about assessments?
Not significantly. I guess I think it's going to be interesting, like you kind of touched on that, Angela, where how different learning ended last school year in March, April, May, and then what our kids are able to get in our district, at least face-to-face instruction, compared to the majority of school districts in the state of Alaska. We're still, unfortunately, a big minority in that we're one of the few districts that are able to do face-to-face instruction K through 12. And maybe that'll, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Petersburg settles out. And then are they at what we would call grade level, or are we expecting kids to not be at grade level because of the challenges that they've been dealt from last spring? I know in my own household, maybe one student that, you know, is doing just fine and another was already struggling before the school year ended and still continues to. So I don't know. I know that testing doesn't show everything, but it is a good barometer to look at when you're trying to compare from one year to the next. And that's the best data that you can look at for a school district wide K through 12. But I just think it'll be kind of interesting to see no matter which way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Erica, you mentioned also tonight going over a grant. What kind of grant?
So I'm kind of excited about this one. It's something that we actually started working on a couple of years ago with Sea Alaska Institute, and then also a partnership with CERC, which is the Southeast Regional Resource Center, and that's the agency that we work with that provides a variety of support services to the district, from everything from educational psychology testing, you know, technology support. I mean, they're just kind of an all-encompassing agency, and so they're helping to manage and implement a grant, and it's called Opening Doors, and it's a cultural awareness and cultural instructional grant, and it's going to provide training for teachers and staff. It's also in partnership with our local tribe and tribal entities with around the state. And then for our administrators and a teacher leader team, a pretty intensive training, like about 6 hours a month on a Saturday, actually, that starts in January. And we're excited about it. I think it's gonna be a really, I'm trying to grab the book here, sorry. The book that it's based on for staff and for our leaders is called Culture in the Classroom. And it has been put out, it's a publication that's been put out by CERC in partnership with tribal agencies and tribal entities around the state. And so we're excited about that. We're going to have our first training for that starting in January when we come back on our in-service days. And then that intensive teacher leader training and administrator training starts in January as well. And we're really excited about it.
Wow. Great. Yeah, that sounds intensive. 6 hours a month.
Yeah. Yep. And actually it's not just this spring, but it even goes into next year. So a lot of work has gone into it, a lot of really good work. I'm really excited about it, just talking about, you know, and it's, and I mean, cultural awareness, cultural instruction, but also there's a lot of work around inherent biases that, you know, we bring to the table that we're not even aware of. There's a lot of work around that, because culture meaning all sorts of culture that people bring, you know, their environment in general, how they were raised, all of those things, in addition to, of course, Alaska Native and American Indian culture and our local culture. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. How much is the grant?
Well, there's stipends related to some of that work that's happening on the weekends. So some of the people that are involved in that will receive a stipend. Our teachers also will get a little bit of a stipend. I'm not sure what that looks like exactly yet. We're still working on, actually, we have another meeting tomorrow with them. Because of course, this was supposed to start last spring, and then it, you know, like many things last year, got sidelined, you know, with other things. So there's a bit of money that's going to some, to help offset some of the work, extra work that people are doing outside of the school day, which I think is always important. And then we'll have teacher leaders and administrators trained to actually provide this type of training ongoing. So it's kind of a train the trainer model, which is always really successful. So you're not dependent on people coming in to be the experts. So yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Sarah? I know you've been on the school board for a really long time. And do you remember seeing anything like this in the past?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to have to, the dredges of my brain. I don't think so. It's been a while. I like the idea, of course, anytime you can, like you said, train the trainer and bring them here, especially, you know, what we're dealing with the last 12 months, but also in the foreseeable future. It's always nice to also leave, but no, I think this will be, hopefully it'll be helpful. It's going to be, like you said, intensive. That's a lot of time commitment, but mm-hmm. hopefully well worth it for the community as well as the kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. You mentioned biases, how people are raised, kind of tolerance for differences, not just one kind of culture.
Exactly. They talked a lot about that. I had a bit of a training in it this summer, and it was, I mean, just some of the exercises that we did within that training were, they're very well done. And, you know, it's not somebody talking at us in that sense. It really does help people kind of dive into, you know, why people respond and react to things the way they do, and how to, you know, truly recognize those things in our own dealings, you know, with people and interactions, just knowing that there are those biases we may not even be aware of that are in there. So I think it'll be really good. I think it's great timing for it too.
Yeah, especially I think of on what's been going on the national stage. Maybe we've had our own little pocket of reality, but as our, both for adults, for us that have been around a while, but also kids leaving, you know, our island and going off into the world and maybe being a little more aware of other cultures than just our few that are, you know, I don't know, more than what we have here, so that it'll hopefully prepare them better.
Yeah. Well, so is there anything we should touch on before we go today? The meeting's tonight at 6:00. It's a regular meeting of the school board.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think, you know, we all have the same information that's coming out publicly, just about kind of the quarantine protocols and all those things, those changes from CDC, but they don't necessarily, I mean, we take our direction from the medical center and public health on any, you know, specific cases. We would be working with them anyway, but it looks like there's some things that are a bit shorter than the 14 days, changing to 10. For those close contacts or positive cases, and then some options for even kind of testing out about a little earlier in that. So just trying to digest all of that and see what that looks like. It doesn't necessarily have any sort of impact on the travel policy at this point. So, but
it could affect maybe if there was another in-school case and kids needed to quarantine, it might be 10 days instead of 14.
Exactly. So that'll be the time that might, you know, come into play for us. So, and then just, you know, participating in some various echo calls. I think you guys reference those on the radio often too, but just talking through kind of processes of what things might look like down the road with, you know, vaccinations and how that might look. And they're not doing trials with, you know, young people under 16 anyway right now. So just be interesting to see how that all, you know, plays out over these next coming months.
Yes. And what kind of guidance you'll get from the state on vaccines, because I know, you know, when little kids start school, sometimes they are required to have certain vaccines and other things they're not required to have. Have you heard anything about that from the state?
We haven't yet, because that was one of the things they talked with us about a bit last week, you know, because they're not doing those trials on 16 and under. So yet, you know, so I don't know that will be something that'll, I don't know. I don't know what that timeline might look like for students. So I think right now they're more kind of focused on those frontline and adults, but there's going to be a lot to figure out.
Yeah, it'll probably look very different in the spring. We can talk about it again then.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you both so much for joining us. This wraps up Campus Connection. Tonight is a regular meeting of the Petersburg School Board starting at 6 p.m. over Ring Central video conferencing. You can listen to the meeting on KFSK by streaming it on our website, kfsk.org. There is a listen live button on the top of our homepage there. To comment in the meeting, you need to call into the conference, and we have links for that on our website. You can also call the district office for that information and to get the password for the conference. Thanks so much and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.